4. "Hello," said Delany cheerfully. The Earthman turned around. Recognition took almost no time at all. "Selany. Am I right, Selany?" "Right. Correctly pronounced. Are you enjoying yourself?" The Earthman said gravely, "Very much. It makes me realize how unique our century is. It was not so long ago I was on Earth, feeling tired of my world, tired of myself. Then I thought, well, if I were living 100 years ago, the only way I could leave the world would be to die. But now I can go to the moon." He smiled without real gaiety. Selany said, "Are you happier now that you are on the moon?" "A little." He looked about. "Don't you have a crowd of tourists to take care of?" "Not today," she said cheerfully. "It's my day off. Who knows? I may take 2 or 3. It's a dull job." "What a shame, then, that you bumped into a tourist on your day off." "I didn't bump into you. I came looking for you. And a hard job that was, too. You shouldn't wander off by yourself." The Earthman looked at her with interest. "Why should you look for me? Are you fond of Earthmen?" "No," she said with easy frankness. "I'm sick of them. I dislike them on principle, and being constantly associated with them in my job makes it worse." "Yet you come looking for me, and there isn't a way on Earth, on the moon, I mean, that I can convince myself I am young and handsome." "Even if you were, it wouldn't help. Earthmen don't interest me, as everyone but Baron knows." "Then why do you come looking for me?" "Because there are other ways of being interested, and because Baron is interested." "And who is Baron? Your boyfriend?" Delany laughed. "Baron Neville. He's a lot more than a boy and a lot more than a friend. We have sex when we feel like it." "Well, that's what I meant. Do you have children?" "One boy. He's 10. He spends most of his time in the boys' compound. To spare you the next question, he's not Baron's. I may have a child by Baron if we're still together when I'm assigned another child, if I'm assigned another child. I'm pretty sure I will be." "You're quite frank." "About things I don't consider secret, of course. Now, what would you like to do?" They had been walking along a corridor of milk-white rock, into the glazed surface of which were inset dusky bits of moon gems that lay about for the taking in most sections of the lunar surface. She wore sandals which hardly seemed to touch the ground. He wore thick-soled boots which leadenly helped weigh him down to keep his steps from becoming torture. The corridor was one way. Occasionally a small electric cart would overtake them and move nearly silently past. The Earthman said, "Now what would I like to do? That is a broad-beamed invitation. Would you like to set boundary conditions so that my answers will not innocently offend you?" "Are you a physicist?" The Earthman hesitated. "Why do you ask?" "Just to hear what you would say. I know you're a physicist." "How?" "No one says set boundary conditions unless they are. Especially if the first thing they want to see on the moon is the proton synchrotron." "Is that why you've come looking for me? Because I seem to be a physicist?" "That's why Baron sent me looking for you, because he's a physicist. I came because I thought you were rather unusual for an Earthman."
"In what way?"
"Nothing terribly complimentary, if it's compliments you're fishing for. It's just that you seem not to like Earthmen."
"How can you tell that?"
"I watched you look at the others in the party. Besides, I can always tell somehow. It's the Earthies who don't like Earthies who tend to stay on the moon. Which brings me back to the question, what would you like to do? And I'll set the boundary conditions. I mean, as far as sightseeing is concerned."
The Earthman looked at her sharply. "That's peculiar, Selany. You have a day off. Your job is sufficiently uninteresting or distasteful so that you are glad to have that day off and would be willing to make it 2 or 3. Yet your way of spending it is to volunteer to resume your job for me particularly, just because of a little interest. Baron's interest. He's busy now,
and there's no harm in entertaining you until he's ready. Besides, it's different. Can't you see it's different? On my job, I'm riding herd on a couple of dozen earthies. Don't you mind my using the term?
I use it myself.
Because you're an Earthman. Some Earth people consider it a term of derision and resent it when a Lunarite uses it.
You mean when a Loony uses it?
Selenie flushed. She said, Yes, that's about it.
Well then, let's neither of us cry out at words. Go ahead. You were telling me about your job.
Oh, on my job, there are these earthies whom I have to keep from killing themselves, and whom I have to take here and there and give little speeches to, and make sure they eat and drink and walk by the book. They see their little pet sights and do their little pet things, and I have to be terribly polite and motherly.
Awful, said the Earthman.
But you and I can do as we please, I hope, and you are willing to take your chances, and I don't have to watch what I say.
I told you that you're perfectly welcome to call me Earthy.
All right, then. I'll have a busman's holiday. What would you like to do?
That's an easy one to answer. I want to see the Proton Synchrotron.
Not that. Maybe Baron can arrange it after you see him.
Well, if I can't see the Synchrotron, I don't know what else there is to see. I know the radio telescope is on the other side, and I don't suppose there's any novelty in it anyway.
You tell me, what doesn't the average tourist get to see?
A number of things.
There are the algae rooms, not the antiseptic processing plants which you've seen, but the farms themselves. However, the smell is pretty strong there, and I don't suppose an earthy earthman would find it particularly appetizing. Earthmen have trouble with the food as it is.
Does that surprise you?
Have you ever tasted earth food?
Not really. I probably wouldn't like it, though. It all depends on what you're used to.
I suppose so, said the Earthman, sighing. If you ate a real steak, you'd probably gag at the fat and fiber.
We could go to the outskirts where the new corridors are being driven into bedrock, but you'll have to wear special protective garments.
There are the factories.
You make the choice, Selenie.
I will, if you will tell me something honestly.
I can't promise without hearing the question.
I said that earthies that didn't like earthies tended to stay on the moon. You didn't correct me. Do you intend to stay on the moon?
The Earthman stared at the toes of his clumsy boots. He said, Selenie, I had trouble getting a visa to the moon. They said I might be too old for the trip, and that if I stayed any length of time, I might find it impossible to return to Earth. So I told them I planned to stay on the moon permanently.
You weren't lying?
I wasn't sure at the time, but I think I'll stay here now.
I should have thought they would have been less willing than ever to let you go under those conditions.
Why?
Generally, the Earth authorities don't like to send physicists to the moon on a permanent basis.
The Earthman's lips twitched. In that respect, I had no trouble.
Well then, if you're going to be one of us, I think you ought to visit the gymnasium. Earthies often want to, but we don't encourage them as a general rule, though it's not forbidden outright. Immigrants are a different thing.
Why?
Well, for one thing, we exercise in the nude or near nude. Why not?
She sounded aggrieved, as though weary of repeating a defensive position.
The temperature is controlled, the environment is clean. It's just that where people from Earth are expected to be, nudity becomes unsettling. Some Earthies are shocked, some are titillated, and some are both. Well, we're not going to dress in the gymnasium for their sake, and we're not going to cope with them either, so we keep them out.
But immigrants?
They'll have to get used to it. In the end, they'll be discarding clothes, too, and they'll need the gymnasium even more than the native Lunarites do.
I'll be honest with you, Selenie. If I encounter female nudity, I'll find it titillating, too. I'm not quite so old that I won't.
Well, titillate, then, she said indifferently. But to yourself. Agreed?
Do we have to get undressed, too? He looked at her with amused interest.
As spectators, no. We could, but we don't have to. You would feel uncomfortable if you did this early in the game, and you wouldn't be a particularly inspiring sight to the rest of us.
You are frank.
Do you think it would be? Be honest. And as for myself, I have no wish to put you under a special strain in your private titillation, so we might both just as well stay clothed.
Will there be any objection? I mean, to my being there as an earthy of uninspirational appearance?
Not if I'm with you.
Very well, then, Selene. Is it far away?
We are there, just through here.
Ah, then you were planning to come here all the time.
I thought it might be interesting.
Why?
Selene smiled suddenly. I just thought.
The Earthman shook his head.
I'm beginning to think you never just think. Let me guess. If I'm to stay on the moon, I will need to exercise now and then in order to keep muscles, bones, and all my organs, perhaps, in condition.
Quite true. So do all of us. But immigrants from Earth in particular. The day will come when the gymnasium will be a daily grind for you.
They stepped through a door, and the Earthman stared in astonishment.
This is the first place I've seen that looks like Earth.
In what way?
Why, it's big. I didn't imagine you would have such big rooms on the moon. Desks, office machinery, women at the desks.
Bare-breasted women, said Selene gravely.
That part isn't Earth-like, I admit.
We've got a hold chute, too, and an elevator for Earthies. There are many levels. But wait. She approached a woman at one of the mirror desks, talking in a rapid, low voice, while the Earthman stared at everything with amiable curiosity.
Selene returned. No trouble. And it turns out we're going to have a melee. A rather good one. I know the teams.
This place is very impressive, really.
If you still mean its size, it's not nearly big enough. We have three gymnasiums. This is the largest.
I'm somehow pleased that in the Spartan surroundings of the moon, you can afford to waste so much room on frivolity.
Frivolity?
Selene sounded offended.
Why do you think this is frivolity?
Melees? Some sort of game?
You might call it a game. On Earth you can do such things for sports. 10 men doing, 10,000 watching.
It's not so on the moon.
What's frivolous for you is necessary for us.
This way. We'll take the elevator, which means a little waiting, perhaps.
Didn't mean to get you angry.
I'm not really angry, but you must be reasonable. You Earthmen have been adapted to Earth gravity for all the 300 million years since life crawled onto dry land. Even if you don't exercise, you get by. We've had no time at all to adapt to moon gravity.
You look different enough.
If you're born and reared under moon gravity, your bones and muscles are naturally slimmer and less massive than an Earthie's would be, but that's superficial.
There isn't a bodily function we possess, however subtle, digestion, rates of hormonal secretions, that isn't maladjusted to gravity, and that doesn't require a deliberate regimen of exercise. If we can arrange exercise in the form of fun and games, that does not make it frivolity.
Here's the elevator.
The Earthman hung back in momentary alarm, but Selene said with residual impatience, as though still seething over the necessity of defense,
I suppose you're going to tell me it looks like a wickerwork basket. Every Earthman who uses it says so. With moon gravity, it doesn't have to be any more substantial.
The elevator moved downward slowly. They were the only ones on board.
The Earthman said, I suspect this isn't much used.
Selene smiled again.
You're right. The whole chute is much more popular and much more fun.
What is it?
Exactly what the name implies. Here we are. We only had to drop 2 levels. It's just a vertical tube you can drop through with handholds. We don't encourage Earthies to use it.
Too risky?
Not in itself. You can climb down as though it were a ladder. However, There are always youngsters swinging down at considerable speed, and Earthies don't know how to keep out of the way. Collisions are always discomforting. But you'll get to use it in time. In fact, what you'll see now is a kind of large hold chute designed for recklessness. She led him to a circular railing around which a number of individuals were leaning and talking. All were more or less in the nude. Sandals were common, and usually a hip purse was slung over one shoulder. Some wore briefs. One was scooping a greenish mash out of a container and was eating it. The Earthman wrinkled his nose slightly as he passed that one. He said, "The dental problem must be severe on the moon."
"It isn't good," Selene agreed. "If we ever get the chance, we'll select for an edentate jaw."
"Toothlessness?"
"Maybe not entirely. We might keep the incisors and canines for cosmetic reasons and for occasionally useful tasks. They're easily cleaned, too. But why should we want useless molars? It's just a hangover from an earthy past."
"Are you making any progress in that direction?"
"No," she said stiffly. "Genetic engineering is illegal. Earth insists." She was leaning over the railing. "They call this the moon's playground," she said. The Earthman looked down. It was a large cylindrical opening with pink smooth walls to which metal bars were attached in what seemed a random configuration. Here and there, a bar stretched across a portion of the cylinder, sometimes across its entire width. It was perhaps 400 or 500 feet deep and about 50 feet across. No one seemed to be paying particular attention either to the playground or to the Earthman. Some had looked at him indifferently as he passed, seeming to weigh his clothed state, his facial appearance, and then had turned away. Some made a casual hand gesture to Selene's direction before turning away, but all turned away. The no-interest signal, however subdued, could not have been more blatant. The Earthman turned to the cylindrical opening. There were slim figures at the bottom, foreshortened because they were seen from above. Some wore wisps of clothing in red, some in blue. Two teams, he decided. Clearly the wisps served protective functions, since all wore gloves and sandals, protective bands about knees and elbows. Some wore brief bands about the hips, some about the chests. "Oh," he muttered, "men and women." Selene said, "Right. The sexes compete equally, but the idea is to prevent the uncontrolled swinging of parts that might hamper the guided fall."
"There's a sexual difference there, which also involves vulnerability to pain. It's not modesty."
The Earthman said, "I think I've read of this."
"You may have," said Selene indifferently. "Not much seems to get out. Not that we have any objection, but the terrestrial government prefers to keep news of the moon to a minimum."
"Why, Selene?"
"You're an Earthman. You tell me. Our theory here on the moon is that we embarrass the Earth, or at least the Earth government."
On either side of the cylinder now, two individuals were rising rapidly, and the patter of light drum beats was heard in the background. At first, the climbers seemed to be going up a ladder, rung by rung, but their speed increased, and by the time they were halfway up, they were striking each hold as they passed, making an ostentatious slapping noise.
"Couldn't do that on Earth as gracefully," said the Earthman admiringly. "Or at all," he amended.
"It's not just low gravity," said Selene. "Try it if you think so. This takes endless hours of practice."
The climbers reached the railing and swung up to a headstand. They performed a simultaneous somersault and began to fall.
"They can move quickly when they want to," said the Earthman.
Said Selene through the patter of applause. "I suspect that when Earthmen, I mean the real Earthmen, the ones who have never visited the moon, think of moving around the moon, they think of the surface and of space suits. That's often slow, of course. The mass with the space suit added is huge, which means high inertia and a small gravity to overcome it."
"Quite right," said the Earthman. "I've seen the classic motion pictures of the early astronauts that all school children see, and the movements are like those underwater, The picture gets imprinted, even when we know better.
You'd be surprised how fast we can move on the surface these days, spacesuit and all, said Thelony. And here, underground, without spacesuits, we can move as quickly as on Earth. The slower whip of gravity is made up for by the proper use of muscles.
But you can move slowly, too. The Earthman was watching the acrobats. They had gone up with speed and were going down with deliberate slowness.
They were floating, slapping the hand hose to delay the drop rather than, as before, to accelerate the rise. They reached the ground, and two others replaced them, and then two more, and then two more. From each team, alternately, pairs competed in virtuosity. Each pair went up in unison. Each pair rose and fell in a more complicated pattern. One pair kicked off simultaneously to cross the tube in a low parabola, convex upward, each reaching the handhold the other had abandoned, and somehow skimming past each other in midair without touching. That evoked louder applause. The Earthman said, I suspect I lack the experience to appreciate the finer points of skill. Are these all native Lunarites?
They have to be, said Thelony. The gymnasium is open to all lunar citizens, and some immigrants are fairly good, considering. For this kind of virtuosity, however, you must depend on babies that are conceived and born here. They have the proper physical adaptation, at least more than native Earthmen have, and they get the proper childhood training. Most of these performers are under 18.
I imagine it's dangerous, even at moon gravity levels.
Broken bones aren't very uncommon. I don't think there's been an actual death, but there's been at least one case of broken spine and paralysis. That was a terrible accident. I was actually watching. Oh, wait now. We're going to have the ad-libs now.
The what?
Till now, we've had set pieces. The climbs were according to a fixed pattern. The percussion beats seemed softer as one climber rose and suddenly launched into midair. He caught a transverse bar one-handed, circled it once vertically, and let go. The Earthman watched closely. He said, Amazing! He gets around those bars exactly like a gibbon.
A what? Asked Thelony.
A gibbon, a kind of ape. In fact, the only ape still existing in the wild. He looked at Thelony's expression and said, I don't mean it as an insult, Thelony. They are graceful creatures.
Thelony said, frowning, I've seen pictures of apes.
You probably haven't seen gibbons in motion. I dare say that Earthies might call Lunarites gibbons and mean it insultingly, about on the level of what you mean by Earthy. But I don't mean it so.
He leaned both elbows on the railing and watched the movement. It was like dancing in the air. He said,
How do you treat Earth immigrants here on the moon, Thelony? I mean, immigrants who mean to stay here lifelong. Since they lack true Lunarite abilities.
That makes no difference. Immies are citizens. There's no discrimination. No legal discrimination.
What does that mean? No legal discrimination.
Well, you said it yourself. There are some things they can't do. There are differences. Their medical problems are different, and they usually had a worse medical history.
If they come in middle age, they look old.
The Earthman looked away embarrassed.
Can they intermarry? I mean, immigrants and Lunarites?
Certainly. That is, they can interbreed.
Yes, that's what I meant.
Of course. No reason why an immigrant can't have some worthwhile genes. Heavens, my father was an Immie, though I'm second-generation Lunarite on my mother's side.
I suppose your father must have come when he was quite...
Oh, good Lord!
He froze at the railing, then drew a shuddering sigh.
I thought he was going to miss that bar.
Not a chance, said Thelony. That's Marco IV. He likes to do that, reach out at the last moment. Actually, it's bad form to do that, and a real champion doesn't.
Still, my father was 22 when he arrived.
I suppose that's the way. Still young enough to be adaptable, no emotional complications back on Earth. From the standpoint of the earthy male, I imagine it must be rather nice to have a sexual attachment with a...
Sexual attachment?
Selene's amusement seemed to cover a very real sense of shock.
You don't suppose my father had sex with my mother?
If my mother heard you say that, she'd set you right in a hurry.
But...
artificial insemination was what it was, for goodness sake.
Sex with an Earthman?
The Earthman looked solemn.
I thought you said there was no discrimination.
That's not discrimination. That's a matter of physical fact. An Earthman can't handle the gravity field properly. However practiced he might be, under the stress of passion, he might revert.
I wouldn't risk it. The clumsy fool might snap his arm or leg, or worse, mine.
Gene mixtures are one thing. Sex is quite another.
I'm sorry.
Isn't artificial insemination against the law?
She was watching the gymnastics with absorption.
That's Marco Four again. When he isn't trying to be uselessly spectacular, he really is good. And his sister is almost as good. When they work together, it's really a poem of motion. Look at them now. They'll come together and circle the same bar as though they have a single body stretched across. He's a little too flamboyant at times, but you can't fault his muscular control.
Yes, artificial insemination is against Earth's law, but it's allowed where medical reasons are involved, and, of course, that's often the case, or said to be.
All the acrobats had now climbed to the top, and were in a great circle just below the railing. All the reds on one side, the blues on the other. All arms on the side of the interior were raised, and the applause was loud. Quite a crowd had now gathered at the rail.
"You ought to have some seating arrangement," said the Earthman.
"Not at all. This isn't a show. This is exercise. We don't encourage any more spectators than can stand comfortably about the railing. We're supposed to be down there, not up here."
"You mean you can do that sort of thing, Selene?"
"After a fashion, of course. Any Lunarite can. I'm not as good as they are. I haven't joined any teams. There's going to be the melee now, the free-for-all. This is the really dangerous part. All 10 are going to be in the air, and each side is going to try to send members of the other side into a fall."
"A real fall?"
"As real as possible."
"Are there injuries occasionally?"
"Occasionally. In theory, this sort of thing is frowned upon. That is considered frivolous, and we don't have so large a population that we can afford to incapacitate anyone without real cause. Still, the melee is popular, and we can't raise the votes to outlaw it."
"Which side do you vote on, Selene?"
Selene blushed. "Oh, never mind. You watch this." The percussion rhythm had suddenly grown thunderous, and each of the individuals in the huge well darted outward like an arrow. There was wild confusion in mid-air, but when they parted again, each ended firmly on a bar grip. There was the tension of waiting. One launched, another followed, and the air was filled with flashing bodies again. Over and over it happened.
Selene said, "The scoring is intricate. There is a point for every launch, a point for every touch, 2 points for every miss inflicted, 10 points for a grounding, various penalties for various kinds of fouling."
"Who keeps the score?"
"There are umpires watching who make the preliminary decisions, and there are television tapes in case of appeals. Very often even the tapes can't decide."
There was a sudden excited cry when a girl in blue moved past a boy in red and slapped his flank resoundingly. The boy who received the blow had writhed away, but not successfully, and grabbing at a wall bar with improper balance, struck that wall ungracefully with his knee.
"Where were his eyes?" demanded Selene indignantly. "He didn't see her coming."
The action grew hotter, and the Earthman tired of trying to make sense of the knotted flights. Occasionally, a leaper touched a bar and did not retain his hold. These were the times when every spectator leaned over the railing as though ready to launch himself into space in sympathy. At one time, Marco Four was struck in the wrist, and someone cried, "Foul!" Four missed his handhold and fell. To the Earthman's eyes,
The fall under moon gravity was slow, and Four's lithe body twisted and turned, reaching for bar after bar, without quite making it. The others waited, as though all maneuvering was suspended during a fall. Four was moving quite rapidly now, though twice he had slowed himself without quite being able to maintain a handhold. He was very nearly to the ground when a sudden spidery lunge caught a transverse bar with the right leg, and he hung suspended and swinging, head downward, about 10 feet above the ground. Arms outspread, he paused while the applause rang out, and then he had twisted upright and jumped into a rapid climb. The Earthman said, "Was he fouled?" If Gene Wong actually grabbed Marco's wrist instead of pushing it, it was a foul. The umpire has ruled a fair block, however, and I don't think Marco will appeal. He fell a lot farther than he had to. He likes these last-minute saves, and someday he'll miscalculate and hurt himself. Uh-oh. The Earthman looked up in sudden inquiry, but Stellany's eyes weren't upon him. She said, "That's someone from the commissioner's office, and he must be looking for you." "Why?" "I don't see why he should come here to find anyone else. You're the unusual one." "But there's no reason," began the Earthman. Yet the messenger, who had the build of an Earthman himself or an Earth immigrant, and who seemed uneasy to be the center of the stares of a couple of dozen slight nude figures who seemed to tinge their scorn with indifference, came directly toward him. "Sir," he began, "Commissioner Gottstein requests that you accompany me."